You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of September 23rd, 2020. And today we're digging too greedily and too deep into Spelunky 2.
So true. My greed is my undoing almost every time. Welcome back, everybody. This is the Experience Points podcast. My name is Scott Juster.
And I'm George Alborg.
We are the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net. It is a serious but not humorless conversation about video games, and I've never been happier to be more enraged.
Oh my goodness. So much anger, and mostly at myself.
Yeah. finally, after years of anticipation, we finally got our hands on Spelunky 2. Went live last week, so we've basically been playing it for a week now.
Just in time, by the way, for all of the roguelike conversation to be shifting to Hades.
Oh man, I mean, we'll obviously talk about Hades in a future show, but like, I cannot remember a time where I have been more happy because I am both playing Spelunky and Hades at the same time.
I feel like I'm getting thumb and wrist pain, though, is the problem.
That is true. There's a lot of precision action happening right now.
Yep.
Gotta start working out.
Yeah, for real.
Gosh, so we're going to talk about Spelunky. I mean, neither of us are even close to finishing even one full playthrough of what I assume to be many different paths to the end.
Correct. I mean, this like Spelunky is a forever game, right?
Exactly.
I mean, there's always a lot of depth. There's always a lot more to learn and discover. It's one of the reasons it's so enjoyable. So I don't think this is going to be like a first impressions. This is basically a debrief. We'll get there, but we know what the guts of the Spelunky system is, you know?
Yeah, we're going to have to, you know, these are our pretty full thoughts about Spelunky 2, and with the caveat that we will probably check back in every once in a while as,
correct,
as you know, new records get broken and, you know, the whatever the new version of the eggplant run happens.
Yes. Oh my God, I cannot wait for that, for sure. In regards to spoilers, I would say we'll probably start spoilering mechanics right off the bat.
I mean, that's essentially... I mean, because we haven't seen the quote-unquote ending, so we don't know much else about the story other than what everyone knows, and the main difference is the mechanics, so it's just kind of...
Exactly.
You know, if you care a lot about the... I mean, and honestly, neither one of us are, you know... we're not running a Twitch channel exclusive to Spelunky Speedrun, so it's not like we're, like, the most experts in the world, but if you're all worried about the, you know... some of the little details, then, you know, just know that we'll be talking about some of the mysteries of Spelunky 2.
Yes, indeed.
So, what first?
Okay, here's what I want to talk about, because I was recently guesting on one of my coworkers' podcasts, Video Game, the VGA cast, and I was the only one on the podcast that liked Spelunky, and everyone was like, and that's what I said! I was like, what? How am I the only one? I was truly shocked because...
It's kind of like I was the only one that liked chocolate. I don't know. I guess some people... It's like, what?
Yeah, it's like when you learn that people in like Europe don't understand peanut butter and chocolate. You
right.
know what I mean? It's like a match made in heaven. How does... That's just incomprehensible to me for you not to like those things. Go ahead and suck on your weird sour sugar fish, you know?
Wait, so dig into this. So like, tell me about this. What was the...
So the biggest issue that they had, and we didn't get too into the weeds about it, to be honest, but was that they felt it was frustrating to feel as though you're always playing but not making any progress. And I tried to reposition that because in my mind, right, like Spelunky is kind of like Dark Souls, but it is kind of independent in its own right, and that I get joy just out of seeing the weird shenanigans I get up to, right?
Yes.
There are times where I do not make it past level 1-1, and I had a great 28 seconds, you know? and I have no regret, like, there's no fear in my book of really feeling as though I'm not engaging in it fully to then not see level 3-4 or 3-5 yet, right?
Yes.
There's no timer for me to get there, because getting there is the joy. Getting there is the fun, right?
Right.
The other thing I think I was encouraging them to try to do was to sort of change how they understand what progress means in a game like Spelunky, right?
Right. Right.
To me, it's about learning, right? There's always something to learn in this game in terms of the sequence of events that could lead to your demise or the reaction time you need, or maybe you've forgotten a lesson, like, you know, don't be so close to a stone plot when it breaks because there might be a scorpion inside, right? And every time something new happens that I've never seen before, it scratches that itch of me adding this to my catalog. And, you know, I've not made it incredibly far into Spelunky 2, but I can already tell you I have improved leaps and bounds from when I was first going into it.
Yes.
And I think you and I were both already pretty familiar with Spelunky because we loved the first game.
Totally. We both spent hundreds of hours playing Spelunky 1 easily.
Right. And there is a learning curve and there's changes in the game. And when we come back to it, like, there's a whole lot to learn. And I still have so much more to learn about some of the levels that you and I tried co-op, for example. And that was still to this day the farthest I've been in Spelunky 2. There's so much to learn about those areas. So whenever I'm running through a round of Spelunky, there's really kind of just two experiences that I'm juggling between, right? One is just the pure executional joy of playing Spelunky. And then there's that moment that triggers where you go, okay, I think I have enough rope. I think I have enough bombs. I'm going to push it, you know?
Exactly.
And you make that call to go further and you're on the edge and you're sort of wrestling with the game. And then inevitably I die because I still haven't seen the end. But in that death was a valiant effort and a learning opportunity. And that to me is that just endlessly enjoyable cycle that was in Spelunky 1 and is still just as strong in Spelunky 2.
I mean, I'm trying to position this in a way that isn't just like the kids these days, they've been ruined. But
yeah,
I really do think, I wholly respect what Call of Duty did to video games in almost a terrifying way. You know, like, I think the idea of progression was basically fundamentally and irrevocably shifted by Modern Warfare.
Yeah.
In that pretty much every single game has to have some sort of meter that fills up. And it's pretty rare when you don't have one of those. And I feel like there is something lost when you aren't thinking about progression in the same way that you would feel progression of, like, man, I used to be able to run a mile in 15 minutes, and now it's 12 minutes, and now it's 10 minutes, and now it's 8 minutes. You know, it's like, you don't see that. You don't see the meter filling up, but, you know, some days you have a good run, some days you have a bad run. You know, like, some days you're really fast, some days you're really slow.
We all have Fitbits, so now you can see the meter fill up.
I mean, that it is kind of true. Like, I think the world has gotten quantified to an extent, and you kind of have to reprogram your brain to see progress that isn't explicitly quantified.
Yeah.
And the way that you put it, it's kind of like, or, you know, another thing that everyone has done in the pandemic, you know, learning an instrument. I'm going to learn how to play the ukulele. I'm going to learn how to play the keyboard, whatever. Like, you just get a little bit better. And some practice sessions, you're just, I don't know, it's just not happening. You're not having a good time. But then if you zoom out far enough, the arc of your experience is you are getting better. You just can't see the meter filling up because it's just not the way it works. And so Spelunky is very much like that. Where, like, last night, man, I probably played the game for 20 minutes before I got out of the first world. And I was like, this is the worst run I've ever had. You know, like, what is happening? And then 20 more minutes, I, like you said, I learned some new stuff. I unlocked some items I'd never seen before. So it's like you start zooming out far enough. And now I will say, like, even compared to when I first started playing the game a week ago, I'm definitely more confident in the world of Spelunky 2. But it just kind of happens as an evolution, not as a quantified progression bar that fills up.
I mean, even the idea that the game does not tell you, hey, if you want to unlock a shortcut, bring a rope to the next one, right? There's not even the roadmap to get to what little progress there is available in the game.
Right.
And on top of that, you know, very few people will tell you, I mean, I guess rather the opposite is true. A lot of people will tell you who are very good at Spelunky and spend a lot of time in Spelunky that if you want to make a true run to beat the game, you don't want to use a shortcut. You want to start from the very beginning because you want to accrue that value over time.
Yep.
Which, to your point, is kind of the strange metaphor for how you learn and get better at the game in the first place, which is start at the beginning again, relearn the lessons again, you know, and slowly build up. I mean, hell, even before this podcast, we were talking about the thesis of some of the dialogue in Star Trek establishing the value of mankind's ability to be great through time and effort and practice.
Yeah.
You know, and working with others. And I think that is at the heart of what's so enjoyable about Spelunky. And I think does require that mindset that I think you're right. A lot of games these days has abandoned, right? Like looking at the way that Ghosts of Tsushima serves you everything on a platter, you know, versus this expectation from Spelunky 2. And to be fair, a lot of roguelikes to find that for yourself, progress that for yourself. And sure, you can tap into the thriving Spelunky community to get help and guidance. But at the end of the day, like if you really want to get better and you really want to learn, and if you want to find the joy in this game, you have to find it yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, and I think it is something like, there's a lot of words written about difficult art where, you know, or difficult literature that you have to read, that it's not difficult for the sake of just being obtuse. It's difficult for the sake of teaching you something through the action of engaging with the media.
Yeah. Which is why one day I'll get back to Finnegan's Wake.
I mean, it is kind of similar. It's like sometimes the point is that there is the medium is the point. And if the medium is, you know, layered and requires you to kind of reframe your thinking, like that is kind of the point in addition to the plot. And so that is the point in addition to just the moment-to-moment gameplay of Spelunky, the meta-narrative of reframing your mind to think about mystery and to think about learning and to think about progression in a less quantified and more like almost artistic way is core to that game, and you really have to buy into it or else it's just an extremely hard platformer, you know?
Yeah. I think a lot about this really challenging race that they do in Tennessee called the Barkley Marathon. I wrote an article about it like six years ago. It's basically this bizarre race where you don't know when the race starts. You have to get invited to the race. It's through the backlands, mostly off trail in Tennessee.
Right.
It has been run every year since like the 80s, and it's been finished by maybe 9 people. And it's just one of the most arduous, dangerous races someone can do. It's an ultra marathon.
Right.
And a lot of people ask, like, well, why bother? Like, the vast majority of people don't finish the race at all, let alone, you know, make it, you know, through 5 laps of the race. And a lot of the responses are like, you know, it's understanding what your own limit is and what your own goals are and being comfortable with that, right?
Right.
Like, I think it's if you can be comfortable with failure and understanding what you get out of minute or smaller progress, even if it's not the sort of ultimate end goal, you can either draw satisfaction from that, right? I could never finish Spelunky 2 and still say this is a great game, right?
Right.
Or you can go into this and say, well, you know, I did my best this year. This was my limit. And next year I'm going to come back and try to push that limit a little bit further.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I think oftentimes when I'm trying to espouse why I find so much value in playing games that are hard or things like Spelunky or Dark Souls, I often find myself trying to diminish the game's difficulty and praise people as being like capable, strong, empowered individuals. Right, you know, like I talk to my friends and coworkers. I'm like, you know what? You can do it. It's like, you know, I am the father and you're my proud son and you can rise to the challenge. I believe in you, you know, because I think that's what the games want you to feel also. And they are kind of telling you that in their systems.
Right. Yeah. That is the philosophical side of this game. And it's something that sounds ridiculous when we talk about it, but it is. Give yourself over to it and hopefully like just reframing it will be valuable.
Yes.
I mean, let's talk practical about this.
Yes. So some of the changes.
I think this game is highly hilarious because the first level is knowingly very similar to the caves in the first game. But I think it's like that to lure you into a false sense of familiarity.
100%. It is such a fucking troll sometimes, dude. Yeah. Like, I think I love the way that the boss sort of shows up out of nowhere.
Yep.
And his moveset is surprising. You know, like when you're, I'm going to go try to whip him. And then he just does like a pub stomp on you.
Yeah.
instead of rolling, is pretty good. I also think that there's a lot, they've changed the frequency of certain things, right? Like there are more, objects, people in the first layer.
Yeah.
They included these moles or mole rats, which are the bane of my existence.
Man, those things.
Exceedingly deadly, but there's just generally more stuff. There's more snakes, there's more arrow traps, but there's also more pots.
Yes.
And so it pushes you into this position where you think, oh, well, I'll just sort of rush through this because I know this realm. Right. And that's a really bad idea because you can end up in situations where you don't have a tool to trigger an arrow trap, or a mole rat will come out of fucking nowhere, or you'll just rush headlong into, an area where there's just a stack of those. What are they, like bearded lizards things?
Oh, yeah. The spiny things. And they just roll towards you. They're kind of like a preview of what the boss is.
Well, but they'll do their lovely little hop first. You know, there is a very... Actually, that's a very good point. I didn't think about that as a way of telegraphing what the boss does.
Yeah.
Smart, yeah. But yeah, I think that the first mine is a deadlier experience than the first one. Which, to be fair, can be a challenge for people who are probably totally new to Spelunky.
You got to wonder who is playing this game. Like, are there any people that have not played Spelunky 1 that are playing this? Because it definitely feels geared towards people that have some sort of familiarity where, there's just some things that are second nature in the first game are just slightly tweaked in the second game. You know, like the mole rats that can go through dirt. You know, usually you think you're safe if you put a wall between yourself and any enemy, but the mole rats instantly flip that on its side, you know? Yep. These guys can burrow through the ground, and so you just got to keep moving. Or the piles of bones that collapse if you hit a bottom part of them, you know? Like, there's just so many little things that are subtle spins on the rules you internalized in the first game. And now you're having to kind of like, you're having to learn Portuguese after knowing Spanish, you know?
Yeah.
It's close enough, but like definitely different such that you have to retrain your brain.
And you have to start rethinking about the uses of it, right? I think the little skeleton blocks are really cool because there are moments where they allow you to access places you couldn't otherwise access.
Yeah.
But it also means that if you're not careful, you'll destroy your exit or your entrance there, and you'll be unable to access that again. So it lets you play around with the space a little bit. I like the addition of those sort of destroyable blocks in that regard.
Yep.
I think the thing that took me the most by surprise was the fact that bomb boxes and bags will now explode.
Yes, man. Just, again, totally makes sense. Like, a flammable thing should react to fire. Like, totally makes sense.
Yep.
But, you know, my old trick of like throwing a bomb into a shopkeeper to like fuck them up, like all of a sudden that is different now. Like, it's a different calculation that I have to make if there's certain items in there.
Right. Because what, you know, the valuable item that you might want are the bombs.
Exactly. And
so if he fires willy nilly, then you're boned, you know? for sure. There's also there's an enemy rather in, I think it's called Volcana, the world's two. Mm-hmm. One or whatever, that are little like robot machines, and they will reflect everything, including ghost ice, for example, shotgun blasts, all that stuff. There are times where you think, okay, well, I'm just going to shoot to the left to clear the way. Bad idea in something like this. And it's always been kind of a bad idea because there could be like a bomb or a box, but the fact that there are now enemies that will reflect that means you have to be much more careful about where and when you're using the abilities that you're used to using, right? For example, have you picked up a power pack at all?
Yes, I just got one last night for the first time. I had to I think that was one of those murderous shopkeeps that I had to do.
Right. So they're expensive, and I think I've only ever used one once, but I think it makes your bombs explode with a far greater radius. Yes.
Yeah.
Once again, like, if you use that, use it with care, because they will upend your expectations about how the world works, you know?
Well, did you notice that it turns you, lights your whip on fire?
Right, which in turn can blow up boxes again, or catch things on fire that you do not want to be catching on fire.
Whoops, sorry, turkey.
I also didn't realize until today that you can cook turkeys by exploding turkeys, and then they give you a health.
Yes.
So cool. So I guess if you get a power pack and whip a turkey, you can get health that way.
That's just tasty roast turkey right there.
Man, just don't do it in the eyes of the turkey monger, I guess. I don't know what he's doing over there.
I mean, there's a lot of little... I mean, in a way, this does kind of feel like, you know, Super Mario Brothers 3 to Super Mario World. You know, it's quite familiar, but now there's things you can ride. You know, there's these turkeys that are kind of Yoshi-like characters in this game. They give you an extra hit. You can bounce off of them, you know, to get it one extra jump if you're falling down a hole. Like,
there's extremely just a lot useful of, like, turkeys.
They really are, and also durable.
Yep.
You can really take some damage with those guys.
I think they can take 3 hits before dying, which is incredible. Like, to be able to body block all attacks.
Yes.
Yeah.
But then again, it introduces. There's so many more NPCs, right? Like, there's the turkey guy who wants to, you know, needs you to recapture his turkeys that have escaped. There's what is it called? The moonlight challenge, I think.
She looks like a kind of a caricature gypsy woman who's like, come in and experience my carnival of wonders.
Well, and I was, and this just, again, it's about what you expect to happen in the game, where I saw her and I was like, oh no, like, what sort of curse is she going to put upon me? You know, like, but really it's a way to, you know, do some, like, real spelunking, you know, like, go in there and, like, search for treasure. And that was the thing that helped us understand what the four leaf clover does. You know, I remember we both, like, kind of learned that through on the stream together.
I really love also the addition of the, I don't know what it's called, but the ghost diamond that's in a pot.
Yes, yeah, the ghost jar or whatever.
Yeah, so at this point, I also tend to always go for that. And maybe it kills me half the time. But the other half, I feel like I am raking in the dough if I can consistently bring that to the end. I also discovered that there's another world that you can access, I guess, by somehow cursing yourself. So if you throw the box at something, it turns that gray. So if you put it on, like, a skeleton pile and then have it fall on yourself, you can curse yourself and then access some other stuff?
Apparently, yes. Like, apparently that there's, like, some secret areas or ways that you could, like, get into some of the secret shops and such.
Yeah. I know that there are ice caves, the gold level is back, the sort of the temple of, what is it, Anubis?
Anubis, yeah.
Is back. The water level you and I experienced, but there's at least, what, 5 or 6 worlds I've yet to see in the game?
Yeah.
And many more.
Yes. Well, and also there's just, you know, I scrolled through some just, you know, light areas of, I have a weird relationship with it, because some of the stuff I will probably never find on my own, you know?
Yes.
It's just, I don't have the time or the skill to do it, you know, and so I need to do some, like, light help to get to, like, the City of Gold. Like, I probably wouldn't have been able to do that by myself. I had to read it and then was able to do it. But I'm going back and forth as to how much I actually want to, you know, maybe after, like, 1 or 2 more weeks or something, you know, really start to open it up after that.
I mean, I'm not going to be good enough for at least another month to try. Like, I can't get through the game normally, let alone, you know, intentionally go out in those sections. I mean, I enjoy being able to discover them on the fly, right? Yeah. Like, and there are weird things like the leprechaun that you can follow to a pot of gold, like stuff like that, that is kind of surprising when you encounter it. Right. And I don't know how it relates or connects to other things, and that's totally okay, because it's kind of entertaining just to feel like I'm you know, in proximity to that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I can only imagine, because even, like, years after its release, you know, people were finding new techniques, new things that were hidden, you know, new ways of combining items and such. And yep. It feels like this game, you know, in some ways, this game is a very traditional sequel in that it feels very similar, like the it's definitely building on it, but it's doing it in such a smart way where it's just adding to the system, and all of the previous systems are still there. It's just expanding on the things and making them more intricate and making them, you know, fit together in new and interesting ways.
Yep, totally. So is there anything that you like in particular, or like a tip or something that you would share about Spunky 2 now that you've spent some time in it?
Oh, you mean like just getting good?
You just get good. Just practice. Put in the hours. 10,000 hours.
So one thing that I like, and I should actually play the first game to do a little comparison, but I think there's some subtle art changes that are actually pretty strong in Spelunky 2. It feels like especially the enemies and the NPCs are, the sprites are bigger. You know, they take up more room on the screen and as such are a little bit more readable. Like the whole game feels a little bit more, I guess compared to the first game, which again was like infinitely readable. It's great. You know, there's nothing wrong with it. This game feels a little bit more stylized, but in a subtle way.
Yeah.
At the same time, Derek Yu plays with the idea of backgrounds, and I feel like some of the traps and some of the enemies are much more hidden and devious in this game.
Oh yeah, especially the jungle level. I find the jungle level extremely difficult compared to the last jungle level.
And I mean, the jungle level in the first game was where the difficulty spiked. Like there was a huge difficulty spike in the jungle, and then if you could get through the jungle, the curve was much more gradual. And it feels like the jungle is living up to its, you know, its legacy.
Yeah, yeah.
How about you? What has been standing out at you?
I think that the weapons feel better. I think the boomerang in particular is far quicker.
Yeah.
And comes back to you much more reliably. A lot of times in the old game, I found it to be just a completely unreliable weapon.
Right.
But I use it quite a bit now, which I think is very good. I also really enjoy the spike boots. I think they were always strong, but the fact that they help you with the quill and in the jungle level let you walk on the small spikes are really good as well. It feels as though each of the items have the impact that they should have. Like they are of greater impact.
Right.
So besides maybe the camera or the teleportation thing, which I've not really messed around with, I think for the most part, the weapons all feel, like all the items feel unique and strong and have a use case depending on what you were encountering.
Right. And they interact with each other in interesting ways. You know, there are items that are specifically meant to pair with each other, like the power pack and, you know, other things. I mean, I think that stuff is, and again, like I was actually kind of nervous about it when I saw some of the pre-release coverage where it's like, it looks like there's like a lot of stuff in this game, you know, like I wonder if this is going to be too much stuff, but I actually feel like it fits together and it's also introduced well, you know, throughout a run. I like that quite a bit. I went through a run the other day where I was in the fire level, the lava level, and it was the first time I had done a lot of the kind of fluid dynamics system.
Yeah. Oh man, the lava is painfully slow, which is both good and bad.
It is kind of it's a weird thing where it's like it's this slow oozing death versus like a sudden disaster, you know?
Well, there are times where it's like, I just want it to pour out because I need to move.
Yeah.
And then there are other times where I'm like, I have to time my jump between drips of lava.
Yes.
And I'm so glad that it's as slow as it is.
Yeah. I think that stuff is very neat. Like the fluid stuff is cool. And also just like, because I was stuck and I was like, well, I don't know what to do. And I realized, oh, I can bomb this lava away so that it flows into a hole that I have dug out. You know, that stuff is just, and I think it's a completely new system. There was obviously lava in the first game, but it wasn't there weren't like liquid dynamics in it.
Yeah. I will say we tried some co-op, and while I think there's a lot of improvements to the co-op, being able to go our own separate ways online, huge.
It is very interesting, right? Like it's almost a different game, you know?
Oh yeah. I mean, 'cause you can go pushing for, you know, or cracking a diamond way on the other side of the map, and then I can trigger our exit, which is very cool.
Yeah.
The connectivity was absolute fucking garbage when I played with you. I played again with our friend Nate, also absolute trash in that one as well. We both have great internets. It's not our internet. So I think something is terribly wrong right now with their servers or their netcode, but maybe they'll fix that in the coming weeks.
It definitely feels like growing pains, where this is the first time, you know, the team and the game itself has had to function online, and just some weird shit happens.
I mean, I saw Nate die in front of my eyes. I watched him die, and then I see the animation of him going into a door. Like, those two things cannot be true at the same time. Thanks to the internet.
That happened with us too, where there was like a Schrodinger's cat thing, where it was like you were dead but also alive at the same time. Like,
yeah, or you had a weapon in your hands, but in my game it was just a whip, and you would fire the whip, and it would react with enemies the same way. Like, at some point, time diverged into two dimensions where the shadow of our realities were on top of each other, but we were not, in fact, playing the same game.
I mean, would it be so crazy if we realized that there was potentially a way to do, like, a splinter run? Yeah, I mean...
Ugh, yeah.
If that were to have happened, this would be the game that would do it, right? Where it's like, oh, whoops, you opened up a parallel universe. I guess one is in the, like, you know, like, I could totally see something like that happening on purpose. So it'll be cool to see what people find out as things keep going.
Yeah, maybe they'll use it for their own benefit by, like, desyncing intentionally somehow.
Maybe I'm reading too much into this, but I feel like maybe not. Because I think you correctly pointed out that the big drill that we didn't know how to use seemed to have a Wajedi above it, and then I read on the internet that is the thing.
I activated it later to get to another level.
Wait, so what was the function of the drill? Like, what happened when you activated it?
So it drops through the entire level, going through the bottom of the floor into another cave entrance with its own separate door.
Oh shit.
And it's then also
just jumps you ahead into the next level.
Well, and then there down that area is actually cool because there's two levels. One goes to just the next level. The other one goes into a red temple where you basically fight Dracula, like a vampire bad guy. But there's like six allies in there. Oh. And you crack it open and you just sort of like wage war against him, and you can get a crown that apparently lets you like draw the Sword of Excalibur later on. I don't know.
Classic Spelunky.
That is far in the future, if at all, for me.
So, okay, then in that case, that, you know, it is worth it reading into some of these things. Do you think it's significant that when you start a run, it's the infinity symbol?
That's a good question. I don't know. I thought about that too, because I was also looking at the animal faces where you get the Wajedi.
Yeah.
You know, like there are these little things in the game where I'm like, I wonder if that's a reference to something,
right?
Or even in the cave system, before you see the infinity symbol, there's all these rooms where it's like people's bunk beds and stuff. Mm-hmm. It could just be flavor, but like, for all I know, maybe there's an entrance to another type of level through that area, you know?
Right. Yeah, I was just thinking about, you know, why would they put that in there? And yeah, and also, like, what is the nature of
this game? Maybe it's Derek,
you
just saying you're going to be playing this game forever.
I mean, it is definitely poetic, where it's like, this is a endless game, essentially, in a way that is not endless because there's, like, season passes or whatever. Like, it's a forever game by design, you know, on the systemic level, not on the commercial level. I just wonder. I guess I wouldn't be surprised if they rolled out some sort of endless mode where, you know, the goal is to just get through as many of the caves as possible and they never end, you know. I wonder if they'll, like, if there will be some sort of infinity reference in that way, you know, maybe after you beat the game or something. I don't know.
I would be interested to see whether or not there's any sort of functionality or thoughts to this game as a watchable game, right? We know that the eggplant run and speed runs of Spelunky grew in popularity over the years, and they were always a sort of blast to watch whenever they came up on like AGDQ or something like that. I think it would be interesting to know what kind of things are hidden here that add that level of challenge. that so few people will experience, but will make this game watchable for years to come.
I mean, I think the online, once they sort out some of the tech stuff, but like, I think the online mode is just choice for streaming.
Well, there's some versus as well. I haven't checked that out at all.
Yeah, that's true. I just think the
esports, here we go.
We start here. I actually don't know. I feel like, I mean, we were certainly in the Spelunky frame of mind during this time, but you know, Spelunky 1 came out, I don't know, in the early 10s or teens or something, and so it was around the time when Twitch was really taking off and, you know, streaming was really taking off in a big way, and I think Spelunky was certainly a part of that. Especially some of the streamers that I still watch every once in a while today kind of started off as largely Spelunky streamers.
Yeah.
And I think that Spelunky 2's, the variety of Spelunky 2 makes it more watchable. And the idea that now there's like these networks of people that just stream video games for a living, now that they can, it's so much easier to do like cameos where it's like, oh, you know, I'm so-and-so from this channel and I'm playing with my best friend like Ninja or whatever. It's like,
yep,
it's much easier to do now that there's built-in online co-op.
Yeah. Yeah. But there's also just so much competition for that kind of time, you know?
Yeah.
I think true. Spelunky 2 will always fall within that same purview of the challenging platformer, with Kaizo Mario,
yes,
players, like that, yeah, that core group, where they're looking for those types of challenges, and really they want ways to showcase the finesse that they bring,
yes,
as they play. Because yeah, I mean, watching some of those people who excel at that type of game is just an absolute wonder.
Yeah.
Because they're performing at their absolute best. And
the peak Spelunky.
Yeah, and like, you know, the idea that Spelunky 2 is just more Spelunky is satisfying to me even in that regard, because yeah, it provides more scenarios and more, you know, wild pursuits for people who are far better at video games than I,
yes,
for them to enjoy and therefore me to enjoy as a watcher.
Yeah. I mean, gosh, we'll have to check in on the game every once in a while, because, you know, we will continue to see things. We will continue to, you know, see people set new records and find different item combos and stuff. But
yeah,
hey, it's been a rough year.
Yeah,
and this is really a nice bright spot, you know, about three quarters of the way through a very rough year.
It actually does feel like now a lot of good hyped games are coming out, and yeah, you know, I'm all for people being active and informed and stay out there and stay strong, but you know, if you are looking for something to distract you, games like Spelunky, I think, are some of the best, because yes, they demand your full attention.
Yes, there's a certain meditative quality to them that is, I find, very relaxing.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, every minute we spend on the show is a minute we're not playing Spelunky 2, so I guess we should wrap it up here.
Exactly. I mean, the length of this podcast is enough to get a good, like, 30 attempts where I die in 1-3. So perfect. Yeah,
or, you know, someday it's like one good, you know, Yama run or whatever it's going to be.
Yeah.
ExperiencePoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And experiencepoints.net is our website. You can find The Watch It Eye there, as well as numerous other episodes of this podcast. You can find us iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts, you will probably find us.
All right. Thank you so much for listening, everyone, and we will talk to you next week.
Ciao.